everyone. We're delighted to welcome you to another podcast hosted by TNP's Data Protection Team. Today, we've chosen to discuss the state of personal data protection regulations in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, especially in the context of Vision 2030 of the Kingdom, which seeks a new era characterized by improved performance of government entities, increased economic diversification, and the promotion of data-driven services. The main particularity of this podcast is that it is also available in Arabic. We're firmly convinced, as I'm sure you all are, that it is essential to understand the language and culture of a society to be able to correctly interpret and implement the obligations of the law in an organisation. I'll be joined today by two of my data protection expert colleagues, Abdurrazak and Antoine.
So, hello, Janet.
Hello, both of you. Abdurrazak, could you provide a brief overview of what personal data protection entails and why it's important, especially within the context of the recent legislative changes in Saudi Arabia?
So maybe the first thing to recall is that the concept of privacy is not new to the kingdom's traditions and culture. The legal system in Saudi Arabia relies both on written laws and Islamic jurisprudence, which value the individual privacy, even if the terms used were slightly different to those defined today. There are so many facts and rules that a whole episode could be devoted to this subject. So let's get back to today's topic, the data protection regulatory framework in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which is composed of the Personal Data Protection Law, PDPL, and its implementing regulations, the regulation on personal data transfer outside the kingdom, the standards, the policies, and other legal instruments that will be issued by the Saudi Data and AI Authority, which is the competent authority for a period of 2 years in charge of monitoring, investigating, and enforcing compliance with the PDPL. In your introduction, Janet, you referred to Vision 2030 and the digital economy. I recall a commissioner saying, to live digital, you must brief data protection. Therefore, it's crucial to regulate the use of personal data within the kingdom.
Thank you. That's very interesting. I love that quote. Antoine, is it possible to start with a basic explanation of what personal data is and the scope of the PDPL?
Sure. Personal data is information that identifies an individual directly, such as person name or photo, or that indirectly makes it possible to identify an individual, such as driving license number. If it's not possible to identify a specific person from the data in question, then that the data does not qualify as personal data. Processing is taking any action on personal data. Storing personal data or deleting personal data is also considered as processing. I should mention that the law applies to any processing of personal data related to individuals that take place in the kingdom by a party that is inside or outside the kingdom. By party, we mean public or private entities and natural or legal persons. The PDPL excludes processing by individuals for purposes that do not go beyond personal or family use.
Okay, and so are there some categories of personal data that are more sensitive than others?
Yes, indeed. The following categories are considered as sensitive personal data. So personal data that reveals the individual's racial or ethnic origin, political beliefs, criminal convictions, genetic data, or personal data related to health or biometric data used for identification purposes. You might have noticed that some sensitive data from GDPR perspective are missing, like the data concerning an individual's sex life. But on the other hand, the PDPL has a distinctive aspect. So personal data that reveals whether one or both parents of the individual are unknown is also considered sensitive data. When processing sensitive personal data, entities are expected to comply with all the provisions of the PDPL in addition to specific requirements such as explicit consent. In all cases, sensitive data should not be used for marketing purposes, and the legitimate interest cannot be considered as a lawful basis.
Oh, okay, thank you, Abdurrazak. So these specificities require special attention. So when will the PDPL come into force?
Yes, Jeanette. The PDPL already came into force on 14 September 2023, but the controllers and the processors have a one-year grace period to ensure compliance with the law. During the grace period, the competent authority will not apply any penalties, but entities are expected to take measures aimed at achieving compliance by 14 September 2024 this year.
Okay, thank you, Antoine. So we have more work to do in the next few months. could you go into further details about the PDPL principles relating to processing of personal data?
Unlike GDPR and its Article 5, the PDPL does not explicitly list principles. They are simply embedded in the PDPL's provisions. So the PDPL includes the golden standards such as lawfulness, fairness, transparency, purpose and storage limitation, data minimization, and the accountability principle. So individuals also have a similar right to this from GDPR. So the right to withdraw consent, to be informed, to access personal data, to correction and destruction of personal data. There is no right to data portability, but individuals have the right to request their personal data to be provided to them in a readable and clear format, which can facilitate portability.
Okay, and so what are the time limits then for responding to requests to exercise rights?
30 days like GDPR, but unlike GDPR, it can only be extended by another 30 days and not 60.
Okay, and just now you referred to accountability. Does this include obligations such as keeping a record of processing activities and appointing a DPO?
Only the controllers can keep a record of processing activities for up to 5 years after the date of end of any personal data processing activity. These records must include information such as purposes of processing, the description, data subjects category, retention period, etc.
Okay, and when are the entities obliged to appoint a DPO?
It appears that only controllers must appoint a DPO when such controllers are a public entity processing personal data on a large scale, or private entities whose primary activities require regular and systemic monitoring of individuals or are based on the processing sensitive personal data.
Okay, thank you so much for all that information, Antoine. So how does the new legislation impact the cross-border transfer of personal data involving Saudi citizens, of course?
The first thing to underline, Janet, is that both the PDPL and the implementing regulation for the personal data transfer outside the kingdom apply to processing of personal data of all individuals who reside in the kingdom, no matter their nationality. The general obligations are quite similar, once again, to GDPR. So the transfer of personal data from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia to controllers and processors located in third countries should not undermine the level of protection of the individuals concerned. The first thing to consider when transferring personal data to a third country is if there is an adequacy decision. In the absence of an adequacy decision, the regulation does allow a transfer if exporters have provided what we call appropriate safeguards, such as binding corporate rules, standard contractual clauses, or codes of conduct. As a last resort, there are also some derogations. For example, if the transfer is necessary to protect the vital interests of an individual, or the transfer is necessary for the performance of an agreement to which the data subject is a party.
Okay, that's all very clear. So just one point, does the authority provide a list of countries with an adequacy decision?
Yes, absolutely. The authorities will provide the list of countries or organizations that offer an adequate level of protection of personal data.
Okay, thank you. So can we expect any equivalence to the Schrems ruling on transfers?
There is no need for such a ruling because the implementing regulation already provides for transfer impact assessments obligations prior to each transfer, even towards an adequate country. So organizations must be able to accurately map data flows outside the country and justify the need to transfer each category of personal data. For example, why such transfers are needed to provide a service to individuals or are necessary for central management operations?
Sorry, Abder, but I would like to add a clarification. There are other situations that require a data privacy impact assessment, even if the processing won't lead to a transfer of personal data outside the country.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Antoine. The law lists the situations that require data protection impact assessment, or DPIA. For example, when providing a product or service that is likely to cause serious harm to data subjects' privacy. What is worth mentioning is that the mere fact of processing sensitive data will require a DPIA.
Okay, so I know that this factor does not have to be taken into account in the DPIA, but what are the potential penalties for non-compliance with the data protection laws in Saudi Arabia?
Fines are up to 5 million Saudi riyal, approximately 1.1 million euros, double for repeated offenses, and up to 2 years imprisonment. But as with the GDPR, very often the most impacting is the brand reputation risk.
Okay, thanks, Antoine. And so I'm aware that you can have a good horse without actually being a good rider. But
yes.
What do you think of the tools that could help organizations to pilot the compliance process?
Provided that the solution is compliant, particularly in terms of data transfer obligations, implementing a solution for personal data compliance offers efficiency gains, ensures consistency in data handling, provides real-time monitoring, and enhances accountability and credibility. DPO tools can be highly beneficial for organizations in managing the compliance process effectively. These tools typically offer features such as data mapping, assessment automation, incident management, and documentation of compliance efforts. They can help DPOs streamline their tasks, maintain record of processing activities, track data breaches, and ensures ongoing compliance with the data protection regulations. Additionally, DPO tools often provide insights and analytics to help organizations identify areas of improvement and mitigate potential risk to data privacy. Overall, leveraging DPO tools can really enhance an organization's ability to navigate complex data protection requirements and maintain compliance over time.
Okay, thanks for all that, Antoine. I know that we have a lot of specialists in our team on these tools, and also that at the beginning of this year, we published an updated version of our DPO compliance tools benchmark white paper. I think that covers around 20 of the tools that exist on the market today, so it's a very complete summary. Well,
yes.
I think that's all. Abdrazak, Antoine, I think this podcast is now over. I want to thank you all for listening, and we'll be back very soon with a new episode. For more information, you can reach us on LinkedIn, Twitter, or by email. Thank you.
Thank you, Antoine.
Thank you, Jeanette.